Hello again, Content World. Today, we got another awesome episode for you. Will Hamnan, new business director of Jungle Creations US, is here on the show. Jungle Creations is killing it on Facebook and YouTube with some of the biggest channels out there, including VT, Twisted, 4-9, Craft Factory, and Level. Will has given us all the details on the story of Jungle, company culture, creatives, and how it all comes together in the real world. Hope you enjoy.
This is the Thought Leaders Podcast.
Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to our kick-ass team here at Thought Leaders. As always, I love bringing you guys the best and brightest content creators to hear their stories. But that is just the beginning of what we do here at Thought Leaders. Our amazing team of analysts are bringing you data-backed insights on the latest industry trends in our Thought Leaders weekly newsletter. We're shipping our best work out to you directly every Thursday for free. So check it out at thoughtleaders.io/newsletter to subscribe. That's thoughtleaders.io/newsletter.
This is the Thought Leaders Podcast.
And welcome everyone to another episode of the Thought Leaders Podcast. Today I am sitting down with Mr. Will Hamnan. He is the director of new business US at Jungle Creations. For those of you who do not know what Jungle Creations is, you have definitely seen some of their content because it is, in plain English, freaking awesome. They are the geniuses behind Twisted, VT, Craft Factory, 4-9, you name it. You're scrolling on Facebook, you're seeing them. They're doing a bunch of stuff on YouTube. Great brand integrations. How you doing, Will? Thanks for joining me today.
Lovely to meet you, and thanks for having me on the show.
Awesome. Right before we dive in, I would love to get a little bit of background on who you are, how you got into this space, and what is a nice British fellow like you doing in New York right now?
Good question. And yeah, an interesting time to be here. So yeah, I guess a bit of background and context on me. I was actually born in Singapore, where I grew up before moving to boarding school in the UK, and never really had much of an idea of what I wanted to do as a career. I think quite a lot of people who end up in the branded content space or the publishing space are in this kind of digital world are on the same kind of page on that front. And went to university, and actually I studied politics, so it was even more of a weird route into the space. And upon leaving university, thought I wanted to go into actual politics and policy, and realized after my first job in it that it was, I choose my words really carefully, boring's not the right word, that's not fair. It was, I guess not my cup of tea, to use an extremely British adage.
And by the way, that makes two of us. I also studied politics and history in university, and about halfway through my first year of university, I said, not for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the idealism of being a young kid, you really think that if you go and do a politics degree, you're going to change the world. And you probably realize as you mature a bit and dig into massive meaty textbooks and look at political history that you probably end up going to be being just a number. I realized I wasn't going to change the world doing that. TBD as to whether I'm going to do it during this, probably not. I ended up, instead of going down the public affairs and policy route, I ended up landing at a political news publication called politics.co.uk, which kind of does what it says on the tin. It was a politics news publication based in the UK. Was working there on the commercial offering they had and the ways they were integrating advertisers into what was at the time just a website. And then we spun out a production company that serviced the third sector and corporates who are looking to affect politics. So I was still kind of touching upon politics a little bit. And then, took a bit of a leap of faith about 3 or 4 years ago now to join what I saw as being a really exciting up and coming business in the UK, Jungle Creations. And I guess here I am 3 or 4 years later, and we're the fastest growing media company in Europe, absolutely killing it. And I'm helping us to expand into the North American market and build our relationships with advertisers over here. So yeah, it was a good punt that I took 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay. Yes, definitely a good jumping of ship. So congratulations on that. And so I guess a lot of our audience is based in the US. So maybe they're not familiar with Jungle, or they're not familiar with some of the Jungle talent. Would you mind just giving a quick overview of what Jungle Creations is?
Absolutely. So you highlighted some of the media brands, I think, in that intro really nicely. I think the only one you missed was Level Fitness, which is a fitness community we own and operate. But yeah, essentially, we're a social first publisher. We were born out of our founder's bedroom at Manchester University, which is the second largest city in the UK. Initially, when he started the business, he was utilizing social and social platforms as a means of driving arbitrage traffic to websites and then monetizing the display ad inventory on those websites in order to make a bit of beer money on the side. Ended up being really good at it, was in the right place at the right time when Facebook particularly's algorithm was massively favoring community and fan pages and publishing pages, which allowed him to massively grow these communities that he was building out on social. To be in a position where, yeah, they were growing to millions and then tens of millions of followers, and he no longer needed to be pushing traffic to websites. He was keeping it within social and keeping those interested parties within those communities on social. And yeah, over the last 5 years, we've just continued to grow those media brands that he built out 5 years ago, and have now grown them to a total following of 115 million people globally. So a huge family. Yeah, it's a huge amount, a huge family of media brands. And I should say, actually loved media brands. They're extremely engaged. Fans have been with us over the years, some of them obviously right from the start 5 years ago, and have been extremely loyal. And yeah, those communities, or those media brands, really their purpose is to connect people with shared passions and interests. So news and entertainment being VT, which is our flagship, food and drink being Twisted, which you definitely mentioned, parenting and DIY, which is Craft Factory. We have a female focused community called 4-9, and then a fitness community, which I mentioned, called Level Fitness. And yeah, our sole purpose and our mantra as a business now, which is obviously very different to what it was 5 years ago, is to help people to thrive both in the online and the offline world. So the long-term strategy, and it was a bit curtailed by COVID-19 and the effects.
As everyone's plans.
Yeah. Is 2020 going to throw us another, grenade? It's been an interesting year so far. But the COVID-19 thing really stopped us when we were really getting into full swing of realizing that potential of bringing these media brands online into the offline world. So we had a number of like real world activations of those media brands that were happening in the UK. Some of them are still going on, but a lot of them we've had to put the stoppers on for 2021. But the one that's really going strong and the one that really would allow, I guess, people to understand the potential of an online brand to live in the offline world is Twisted. About 2 years ago, we launched a restaurant called Twisted London, which is a dark kitchen, so isn't a physical site you can go into and sit down and have a meal. Not that you would be able to do it right now anyway. And the idea behind Twisted London was to serve food that was inspired by the food that is existing within the media brand where it lives. So on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Snapchat. The idea was that we would have this dark kitchen and we would sell food through Uber Eats or another food delivery service. And what started as one initial restaurant, which was in a unit just underneath our office in East London, has now turned into over 25 different dark kitchens across the whole of the UK. So we have enormous coverage of Twisted as an actual restaurant across the whole of the UK, which is awesome. We've got plans to do that in the US, but as of yet, again, COVID being a bit of an issue, we haven't quite expanded as quickly as we'd like.
Wow. So first of all, I'm really happy that you brought up the real world crossover from the content, and we'll get to that later, because that's something that I really want to expand upon, and I have my own thoughts on that and some really, really cool stuff going on in that space. But just to take it back 1 second, you guys essentially grew from your co-founder's college dorm or whatnot into a social media and media powerhouse with 115 million followers. Mm-hmm. How do you think you guys have been able to do that and have that incredible audience loyalty where people are coming back? And you talked on the word community. How have you guys been able to create this community around the content?
Yeah, it's a good question. And that ultimately is the secret sauce. I wouldn't say there's a massive secret that I can't share with you. And it's probably a combination of factors. I think as a starting point, there's quite a lot of luck involved. In equal measure with a hell of a lot of hard work from Jamie and the core team initially to grow us to a level of critical mass that has allowed us to like keep the ball rolling and continue to grow, even as platforms like Facebook have really curtailed organic reach and prevented people like us from growing to the size we are. But I guess if you were to put it on a couple of reasons, it ultimately is just having amazing and incredibly engaging content, whether you're doing that through licensing, which we're doing really heavily in the early years. So working with people like Newsflare in order to license huge volumes of content, or people like Viral Hog to get that super cute video of like a Dachshund puppy that's just been born and is struggling to walk. As a really bad example of like a super viral video.
One of these food, Twisted has a lot of stuff going viral. So
yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully we're not cooking the dog, but in the early stages, it was a hell of a lot of licensing. And then what we've really done is to pivot into original content. And we have a huge team of creators that sits within the business under each media brand who are truly experts in producing the content that those media brands put out. So the Twisted team is a team of, I think it's actually now three or four chefs now who are of not only chefs, but are also video producers. So they are a one-stop shop and can do everything, which is super important as they're isolating at home and they don't have access to, if they're a chef, a videographer, if they can't do it. So Twisted is four people, Craft Factory is another three, and each of these channels has their team of content creators who are really, leaders, I guess, in their field at creating engaging social content, which in turn then builds the following, retains the audience because people just want to come back for more. And I think the thing that's really going to solidify our growth going forward, so if you think of it as going from a hell of a lot of licensed content through to lots of original content, is ultimately these personalities that are behind that content really coming out and into the fore and then building that connection with individuals. To continue our growth and solidify that loyalty. Mm. In a roundabout way, ultimately it's just great content is what's done it.
Well, that's what we always like to hear, great content, because I think that in the end of the day, that's what people are coming for. They're looking for great content that not only they can laugh at, learn from, they can actually do within their own home. And you guys are doing a lot of that. Just looking down the roster, right? You have VT, which is your news and that vertical. Then you have Craft Factory, which obviously is everything kind of do it DIY things. And you have Twisted, which is food-based, and Level Fitness, which is a fitness channel. So that's really interesting. Do you guys see a lot of crossover? I'm not sure if you would even know this, between your fans of one brand, because they are so different but so unique, and I guess kind of neat. Not, I don't say niche, but you know, they kind of hit the big tenants. Do you guys see someone, for example, who's a big Level fan is then going to be a big Craft fan, or it's separate?
Yeah, I guess it's a bit, it's into your point as of saying that maybe we're not able to see it. It is quite difficult because these communities live across so many different platforms to be able to say, and with data protection regulation, it is very difficult to say, right, John Smith, who is a fan of Level Fitness on Facebook, is also a huge Twisted fan on YouTube. It's almost not impossible to do that, but we can see from when we try to deduplicate data, we can see that there is a fairly hefty crossover across those media brands. And I think one of the ways in which that naturally happened in the early stages or the early years is that we would utilize the size of some of the brands that were larger in the early stages to amplify the content of some of the smaller pages. So what you would have seen in the early stages of the growth of our business and growth of these family of brands was cross-posting. So we'd be utilizing VT to grow Twisted's page. So in posting a Twisted recipe video on VT, you would be naturally reaching VT's audience through Twisted's content, which would ultimately mean that you'd probably have someone who would be following both pages and engaging with content across the two. But yeah, I guess I don't think we've got any hard data to say, right, a certain percentage is followers of multiple brands or not. I'd have to ask the insights and strategy team. They might be telling me we definitely have this data and I'm calling bullshit on it, but I'm not sure.
Okay. A question that I've been wondering. So recently I saw that Facebook, you know, I think now if you look at Instagram, it says Instagram by Facebook. WhatsApp is now WhatsApp by Facebook. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys are not necessarily plugging the Jungle Creations name on all the channels, right? People might not necessarily know that VT is part of you guys. They might just think it's a separate entity. Is that a conscious decision, or that's just something that you guys have never kind of, you know, you have just haven't done yet, or that's something down the line you guys are trying to do, kind of unite everyone under one umbrella?
Yeah, interesting and another good question. I'm just trying to think back to exactly what the strategy is behind that. I know when I first joined the business about 3 or 4 years ago, a lot of the URLs on the Facebook pages were Jungle VT or Jungle Twisted, because I think there was an assumption within the business that having recognition of the ultimate holding company or the ultimate owner of that family of media brands would help to foster a greater sense of community amongst those media brands. We started to drop the Jungle off of the URLs or the unique names of those media brands over the last couple of years. They've just dropped off gradually and we've reverted to them being specific media brands. If I'm honest, I think it must be, although I'd have to ask our chief content officer, Mel. It's definitely a question for her. And again, she's probably telling me I'm saying the wrong thing.
but that's why we're here, to have an organic conversation. Yeah,
It's fine. I think it was that, it was because it was a number of years ago. I think it was ultimately because we didn't feel like it was, from a marketing perspective, building the Jungle brand in any meaningful way. And actually, instead, what it was doing was confusing those media brands. If people weren't making the link between the two, mm-hmm. then they're a bit like, well, why is it called Jungle? Is it something like to do with the food? Or is there something to do with the news? Is specifically like, is it Jungle music? Like, what's going on? Yeah, exactly. So it makes it a little bit different.
Okay. So just going back now to just the massive amount of follow you guys, like 150 million. Where is most of that traffic coming from, or is it different for each of the big channels?
So it's different for each of the channels for sure. But ultimately, and one of the reasons why, to go back to your earlier question of what on earth does a British guy like me end up doing in New York, our largest audience is in fact in North America by follower count. So our follower account is about 60% North American, which is a huge proportion of that 115 million. Hence why it makes sense for us to be in market here, and the US forms a massive part of our expansion plan globally over the next kind of 5 to 10 years. Although if COVID can tell us anything, it's that you probably can't plan that far, far ahead, but it's where I'm here for now anyway. But beyond that, and the reason why we have such success in the UK, and we really are the leading social publisher in the UK, although I'm sure Lab Bible would love to argue with us about that, we have a huge audience in Western Hemisphere English-speaking countries. So I'd say it probably goes, and there's slight disparities by channel, but it probably goes US, UK, Australia, New Zealand, Mexico is a bit of an outlier in there. But we truly do reach the entirety of the world. I mean, it's amazing to see some of the data on where we're reaching in really far-flung countries where I just am certain that no one would have ever come across our media brands, but I guess that's the power of social.
Yeah, and you guys are mostly on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube, or how is that split broken down?
Yeah, we're mostly Facebook ecosystem. Ultimately, that's where all of these media brands were first born, but we're pivoting across the platforms and driving incremental growth across them and have done for the last 2 years, where we're seeing a huge amount of success. And in terms of minutes watched right now, is actually Snapchat. So we've built a really strong relationship as a publisher partner of Snapchat over the last year or so, really, and have been producing a number of original shows, which is something that's a really big focus of Snaps at the moment. I just watched their publisher summit yesterday, and it was at least a fifth of what they were talking about was their work with content creators and publishers like us. Some of the Snap shows that we have on that channel, particularly from our 4/9 media brand, so it's a lot of like beauty tutorial and hack type content there, is driving in the hundreds of millions of video views per episode, which puts us right up there with being one of the top content creators on Snapchat. So we're quite evenly spread across a lot of platforms.
Wow, that's a very big number, and it's always very awesome to hear that companies that are kind of started in someone's basement or dorm room are on this amazing trajectory. And speaking of that, so you're out in the US right now. So would you be able to kind of walk me through, if you can, kind of the strategy of having you out there, and what are you guys trying to do? Because you did say so many people in the US watch you guys. So it's obviously very, natural that you're out there.
Yeah, so it's completely logical. It may not feel it at times when I'm in the epicenter of a global virus pandemic and there's protesting going on the street. It may not seem logical to be here right now, but from a business standpoint, and yeah, sometimes my mum's like, you should probably just come home to Dorset in the British countryside. But the idea behind it is that we have a huge audience in America. Therefore, we have the ability to really help advertisers in North America to connect with them in order to reach them and truly engage them on social, and ultimately bring those brands out of their category and into popular culture and make them relevant. So that at the very core is the justification as to why I'm here. The strategy, behind what we're trying to do is to essentially drive more revenue, and it's to grow the business, and it is to make us into a truly global social publisher. So there have been like the odd mooting of, should we be in somewhere like the Middle East? Should we be in Australasia as well? And there have been these ideas over the years to go out and have satellite offices in the major kind of geographical locations of the world, because we definitely have a role to play in any geographical location or country where we're reaching a massive audience, and there is always going to be an appetite from an advertiser out there. But the idea behind me being in North America is ultimately because we have a huge audience here, and we have a massive role to play we'd like to think, in social culture, and therefore there's a massive opportunity with advertisers out here.
Cool. I'm happy you really brought up the word advertisers, obviously, because a lot of what you guys are doing, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys are doing some really, really great collaborations. I was just going on the website before, like huge brands, Fanta, Pepsi Max, all the just massive, massive brands. Can you walk me through that part of Jungle Creations? Because I think that's really, really cool. And you guys are doing that, it seems like, a lot, and that's a large part of the of your company.
Yeah. So, I guess to take it back one step and divulge a little bit more information about how we make our money, which I think a lot of the time, the thing that people I meet with, not just in a personal capacity, but mainly even in a business capacity, so marketers, find really interesting, is we actually have an extremely diversified revenue model. So we're making money through one way, which you mentioned, which is through collaborations with brands, and that's integrating brands into those communities to help them to achieve their marketing goals and objectives. Another way in which we make revenue or drive revenue is through programmatic inventory that's platform-based or website-based programmatic inventory. And then we also have a commerce arm to our business. And then we also have, obviously, this restaurant business that kind of sits kind of with it. It's a JV, so it's kind of within the business. Kind of not. And obviously, within the food space, there's a lot less money. Well, I was about to say there's a lot less money than you think. I think we all know you don't make a hell of a lot of money running food businesses and a restaurant business. Yeah. So we have this kind of diverse way in which we're generating revenue across three kind of, I guess, separate but connected business units. And one of them that you mentioned was through these collaborations with brands. And ultimately, that's, I think, we're not unique in that that's how a lot of social publishers are driving revenue. But I think we definitely do it. We'd obviously say this, but we definitely do it better than most, both in terms of the branded content that we're creating, the quality of the content. I'd like to say we blow our competitors out the water, but also in terms of the engagement metrics that we're driving on that content and therefore the worth and the value for brands. Mm-hmm. So over the years, we've won, I think it would be fair to say, hundreds of industry awards. We were recently, I just saw today, our comms team let the whole team know on Slack that we recently been crowned, or in the last month we were crowned, the Drums branded content team of the year for the third year running.
Wow,
also, thank you. And yeah, it's definitely something I can't take the credit for, other than bringing the horse to water and bringing the advertiser to that opportunity, being, you know, mainly focused on commercial stuff rather than content creation. But yeah, that team is also a Cannes Lions award-winning content creating team. We've won a Cannes Lions for social video. We regularly win DigiDay, Ad Week, Campaign Magazine awards for the content that we produce. And it's fair to say we work with some extremely large brands along the way. I mean, you mentioned Fanta and Pepsi Max. I can't think of a CPG conglomerate that we haven't worked with in the world. We list like Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Coca-Cola, Kraft Heinz, Mondelez, General Mills. I could go on across our portfolio of brands. And ultimately that is because we are truly helping them to achieve their marketing goals and objectives with what we're doing. We're helping to ensure their brands maintain relevance, and obviously doing it pretty well because, you know, we list so many amongst our client base. It's been great. And some of the content as well, I genuinely think is enriches people's lives and is useful. Like a lot of the content that we produce across Twisted and Craft Factory, for example, is tutorial based content. It's showing someone actually how they can cook a certain meal. It's showing them how they can occupy their kids during lockdown, which they're struggling with because they're trying to juggle work as well as childcare. And it's giving them like a fun tutorial that they can do with their kid, you know, to keep them busy and to enrich their lives. A lot of that content that we're incorporating and integrating brands into is actually useful. And I think ultimately audiences, in particular on social, where it's a lot more active viewing than passive viewing, they are appreciating that sort of brand involvement and brand integration. It's not just this is sponsored by a brand, which we'd say probably add no value. It's saying in order to do this tutorial or in order to do this at home, which we've got data to prove people do this at home as well. In order to do this, you have to purchase this product or you need this brand. So it is actually useful and rich in people's lives. And I think that's, yeah, the most interesting thing about it.
Well, I definitely agree with you. And I was chatting on my last episode with David Bloom, a really interesting journalist, great. And he does Hollywood and tech. And he was really explaining how there's pretty much a wave of industry dollars that go into traditional TV advertising, and how this year, for the first time, I think he said it was between $11 and $14 billion a year. And this year, they're projecting this is going to be the first year that it's going to dip below that 11. And he was saying that a big part of that is because he thinks that branded content is taking away so much of these big brand budget, and rightfully so, because you were saying it's interactive, it's enriching people's lives, and it's really effective, right? You know, if I'm sitting there on a TV and watching a spot for Coca-Cola, I might not get off the couch and go buy a Coca-Cola, but if you guys are doing an awesome recipe, you know, some cocktail on Twisted or something, we're using Coke, yeah, I'm going to go out and get that Coca-Cola. So I definitely understand, and I think it's awesome. And myself, I buy a lot of stuff branded content wise. Like I hear it on a podcast, I'm buying it. Well, I would love to know, or if you can walk me through how one of these collaborations starts off, and then how does final product get delivered when it comes to the creative?
Yeah, interesting and good question. We do have quite a strict workflow of how it works, which it has to be because we are delivering such a high volume of branded content. But essentially, it will almost always start with someone like me or one of my team members brokering that relationship with an advertiser. We tend to bring ourselves to market in two main ways. One is completely custom integration opportunities, where we're opening up a conversation with an advertiser. We're saying, like, here's our audience. It's very like open kimono. This is what we've done with other brands. We can do something truly unique and or bespoke for you. Or the other way, and something we're moving really heavily into, is having a slate, an upfront slate of shows that by channel we are looking to launch, and that there are opportunities for brand involvement. We're just working on our H2 slate for North America at the moment, where we're going to be going out to market in the next couple of weeks and trying to drum up interest in these shows that we have developed editorially, and trying to get brands to get involved in them and integrate into them. Once we eventually have sign off on either the completely custom idea or the involvement of that brand in the show, we then pass the whole project over to a large project management strategy and creative team, who really, I guess, are the ones that help it to come to life. We've been extremely agile during lockdown and turned stuff around from initial kickoff meeting with the advertiser to talk about like brand guidelines, watch out, mandatories, talking about basically how the project's going to go. We've been amazing in turning around content in about 7 days or less. And I know at times in the past, I've had an advertiser who's needed to activate something because the weather is a certain way outside, and we've turned stuff around in 24 hours. Although my project management team, yeah, would hate me for doing that. I have a really good friend, it's the same. We turned something around. I think it was in the winter in the UK in 2018 for Snickers in 24 hours, because there was like a snowstorm for a day. And yeah, I just called up my friend in the project management team. I was like, look, we're going to get this done. And initially she just hung up the phone on me, and then eventually came round and saw that there was value in adding like Mars to our roster of advertisers and proving out that we can do truly reactive social work. And yeah, they've become a great partner since. We've actually this year just signed off a quite substantial partnership with Uncle Ben's, which is a year long partnership worth in the high six figures. So clearly that was a good shout back in 2018. But yeah, normally our production time frame is anywhere, to be safe, in the region of 3 to 6 weeks to turn around content. Yeah, we can obviously squeeze that, as shown by COVID and the Snickers example I gave. And then in some instances, actually, it may take even longer to create that content, because we need to do things like quite a heavy casting. We're going to have like quite complex moving parts on the shoot day. I remember we worked on one over here in the US last year, and it was a 6 month delivery schedule, because we just couldn't find the cast member that we needed, who was going to be central to this piece of content. Luckily we had 9 months to play with, because it was a Veterans Day campaign and we kicked off in January. But yeah, it was pretty touch and go come the summer, where we're like, we probably need this ex US Army veteran that we've been looking for 3 months, and fortunately we eventually found them and created great content. But yeah, it normally is a 3 to 6 month process. And then when we get to the end of that process, we involve the kind of delivery team, which involves paid media professionals and obviously the channel leads, to ensure that we are scheduling the content correctly. We have exactly the perfect format through that content, from the 3 second stinger at the beginning to where the big reveal comes in, to the social caption, to the white box caption. There's a lot of science that goes behind that to ensure that once that content actually sees the light of day and is activated, it's going to perform as best as it could do. Then the content goes live, hopefully millions of video views, lots of organic engagement, brand becomes loved, and hopefully they come back for more.
That's a nice way to put a nice bow on top of it. No, that's yeah. Interesting. My question is about that. When it comes to the creative, so you guys are obviously, you know, a very creative agency, and you guys are doing tons of media. Are the brands trusting you to come up with the creative for the product, or are they telling you what they want?
So it's a, I'd like to say it's a fully collaborative process. Inevitably, it completely depends on the brand. Some brands have much stricter brand guidelines and want more heavy involvement, and can be a little bit trickier to work with. Other brands are literally like, we trust you, you're the experts. There's this one thing you mustn't do. the bottle must always be shown from the right-hand side, something like that, and just let us run with it. I think the best way in which we work with brands is when it's truly collaborative. But yeah, we're never going to have an instance where they're like, sign the contract, here's the money, go do it. We don't want any level of approval on it. There's always going to be some sort of creative control on the project. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to your point about us being extremely creative, we are actually also doing I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe it in that sentence, probably just start the sentence again. We have basically spun out of the business, although it still sits within the business, a creative agency because of the amazing collaborations and branded content partnerships we're doing across our media brands called The Wild, which is now, because we've proven out that we can do such great work across our communities and activate across our media brands, is now producing white label content for brands and for their own social communities. It's now managing huge social communities for brands. So it doesn't even touch upon the media brands that we own and operate. So the most recent example I can think of is that whilst the MLB is not actually going on at the moment, we've built out a content series for the MLB, which is completely white label, which is activating through the MLB's channel. So yeah, to your point about us being extremely creative and whether we've got trust from brands, we're now being so well trusted by brands because we're so good at what we do that they're like, yeah, sure, you can do stuff that lives on our own channels and we trust you to go and create great content. And yeah, it's one of the highest growth areas of the business right now, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it's super, it's amazing to hear again that, you know, you guys have that collaborative aspect. And that's what I think. And I think that brands are noticing, you know, if you're, for example, Snickers, just for the case that you gave, I can hire someone and so shoot a commercial and throw it on TV and it's okay. But when you have a company like you guys, where you're interacting with people on a daily basis, not only with advertisers, but with regular content, you really know how to connect with people. And really, I think that is the power of branded content, because even without the advertising aspect, you guys are still engaging with people and people are engaging with you guys. So it makes sense, you know?
Just to interject on that point, Here's the interesting bit and here is kind of the secret sauce behind it. It is all insights led. We have access to, and this is what really sets us apart. And I don't think, again, I'd have to ask the CEO of Complex and I'd have to have a chat with him. I don't know. Call me up. I'd love to have a chat about it. But if they're anything like we are and they realize the potential of the data they've got their fingertips, because they have we've got an engaged audience of 115 million people we're speaking to in real time. We can talk to them through Instagram polls, stories. We can see what content's trending. And then we can overlay that real-time data with third-party resources like YouGov, Nielsen, et cetera. We're in the perfect place to get this content 100% right. Like if it doesn't go right, we're obviously doing something wrong and there's been a breakdown along the delivery system to deliver that content. But we have such incredible real-time insights that it should always just be going right and we should be doing amazing things. And I think this is potentially the stumbling block for creative agencies. And to your point about they've created a TV ad and it's kind of gone well and I'm sure they're running a hell of a lot of brand metrics and brand studies against it to track their prompted, unprompted brand recall. They probably have ways in which and mechanisms in which they can track search uplift and acquisition of whatever they're trying to sell. For sure, like, I get that. But ultimately, I don't think the creative idea can ever be as strong because they are, a lot of the time, and there's a huge diversity issue within the industry, a load of white guys sat in a room going, this is a cool creative idea, this will work. Yes, that massively belittles them because they do have a huge amount of data to back it up. But do they have real-time access to 115 million people that have been a loyal audience for 5 years? No, they don't. They quite simply don't. And again, not to shit on anyone else, but I'm enjoying doing it. The issue I have with influencers is that they can't possibly fully understand their audience as well as they think they do, because there is such, especially on Instagram, for example, such limitations in terms of the data that they provide us with, or we can see, or they can see. And ultimately they're not a business of 150 million people who are specialized in doing this. It's just one individual. So I think social publishers sit in a really nice space between the truly micro or micro side of marketing, like influencers, et cetera, affiliates, and the truly macro, like big TV. We're in a really nice space where we've got the reach and scale to reach huge audiences, and we have incredible creative expertise to put stuff in front of them that's authentic and truly resonates.
Mm-hmm. So when you guys are partnering with brands, are brands coming to you mostly for brand awareness campaigns, or is it really to push and drive sales?
So I'd say it's a mixture of both. I'd say that it has changed a lot in the last couple of years. When I first joined the business, and social has moved very quickly, I guess, and marketers, I guess, when I first joined the business, didn't fully understand the potential of what a branded content partnership could do. We were very much like a test. It was like, oh, this is I've just had this cool meeting with this guy. I didn't know this was a thing. Whereas it's now like, there's even people's roles within businesses who are sponsorship and branded partnerships lead. And this is what I do, is what they manage.
Right. That's what I work with every day. Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly that. Their job is to source and procure these partnerships. So it's come a long way in just a short space of time in just 4 years. And I'd say there's been a bit of a swing from 4 years ago, when it was seen as like a reach and scale tactic. A frequency tactic of hitting like a huge audience, and a brand awareness tactic, to there being a lot more push towards trying to add lower and middle funnel elements to a campaign, which is something that we do offer a lot of brands. I'd say historic advertisers still looking at us as a brand awareness platform and a means of driving affinity, making their brand culture relevant. That's great. We're awesome at doing that. We're brilliant at doing that. Smaller, not always smaller, but startup scale up businesses, particularly in the D2C space, are really asking us and questioning from us like, okay, great, you can drive brand awareness, but can you drive a sale? And the answer is yes, which is really great. We can do, we just have to really take a step back before we go and create the content and build out the campaign before we go and do that, to ensure that we're building that with that KPI in mind. So the most recent campaign I can divulge that we're working on at the moment, and I've just had the email come through before we jumped on this from my paid social team, is we're running a campaign with nakedwines.com. They produce incredibly good wine, or that they provide people with a pretty good wine from independent winemakers. It is like a kind of an angel investment platform where you give them money, they distribute that money to independent winemakers, and that gives you access to original wine that you wouldn't be able to buy anywhere else.
Wow.
And it's a really cool concept. It's wine delivery, but with a bit of a twist, because it's this kind of like angel investment mechanic and it's independent winemakers. And yeah, we kicked off the campaign last week. They have a CAC that we are beating by 30%. That they're looking to hit, and we're running it through a kind of like social affiliate commerce campaign. So instead of us building a campaign out to raise brand awareness, we've built this whole campaign in mind that we're trying to get people to redeem a voucher code and purchase wine, and we're selling a lot of wine, so it's good. So we can do it, but yeah, it depends on what type of business they are. Like, ultimately we can handle all parts of the funnel. We just need to really think about what we're producing and how we're activating it to ensure that we're achieving what it is they're looking to achieve.
I think it's interesting. I'm really happy you brought up D2C businesses, because the more, you know, I've been in the space for a while, and just the more when I have a chance to think about it, I really believe that those two, you know, influencer marketing, or more accurately, branded content and D2C brands, were not only made for each other, I really do believe that they need each other to survive. Because if you're a small startup, for example, like your wine company, I don't, you know the financials about it, but they might not be able to afford, or might not even be financially smart for them to go run a TV ad somewhere. But they can come to a company like you guys and actually get people to not only see their advertisement, but actually click and interact and then buy wine. And I think that convergence of the two sectors are just so incredible, and they really both need each other. And I'm super happy that you guys are doing it. And I think you guys are actually taking this kind of what we were talking about at the beginning. You guys are taking that, in my opinion, kind of to another level, where you're taking the content from the internet, right? You're essentially pulling it out of people's laptops and pulling it out of people's smartphones and putting it in the real world with these activations and things that you're doing. So I would love to hear more about that kind of stuff, the restaurant that you guys are doing, and the plans for you guys of getting content into the real world.
Cool. Yeah, I guess what are you asking, what's next on the kind of roadmap?
Yeah, exactly. And or roadmap. Even how, let's just, you know, how did that come about for you guys? How is it going, and what's next when it comes to this real world content?
So the restaurant's a really funny one. And I think I can share this, but my head of comms will tell me if I shouldn't have said it, I guess, afterwards. But yeah, sorry, Hannah, in advance. But the restaurant came about because we're in this really interesting unit in East London. That's our UK headquarters, although TBC, because of everything that's going on at the moment with COVID, and if we're going to stay in that office, do we need that much space? Can people work from home now going forward? Because we've really adapted very well. Anyway, I digress. Below our office, which is just, you go in the office, you go up a set of stairs, under the stairs and to the left-hand side was this unit which had a food business based in it. I don't think it was a restaurant, but they were making food in there, and they had a commercial kitchen. And we gradually, because we're in that office for about 2 years, built up a relationship with the owners of that business. Or certainly Jamie definitely did, our CEO founder, because he was the one that was always staying late. He did his piano lessons at the office. He was always working on like the big global expansion plans, all that sort of stuff. So first one in, last one out. And he built up this rapport with the people that were based next to us making food. And ultimately what happened was they developed a really good relationship, and he found out one day that they were about to go under, and they weren't going to survive. They were going to have to move out. And I don't know why Jamie, you probably have to ask him. I'm not 100% sure why he was like, this is a great opportunity. Now's the time to do it. I think there was always that entrepreneurial mindset where this idea was in the back of his head, but he chose that as being the moment to say, right, I have this like really nascent, tiny idea to build this restaurant empire and bring that brand into the real world. And we took a risk. We took that, paid for the, you know, entered the lease, paid for the lease, took it off their hands, and built the restaurant there and then, and just went ahead and did it. Found people who taught us and helped us understand how to run a dark kitchen. Like, obviously we know how to shoot content and make tutorial videos, and we have a kitchen studio where we're creating that content, but we don't know how to produce 150 burgers in a service. Like, we needed to get chefs in, KPs, like all this sort of stuff. It's a big risk to take, especially when you don't have any experience of the restaurant industry, right? So yeah, it was just, I guess, a punt from Jamie, and good timing or bad timing for the people that obviously their business didn't quite survive, but great timing for us to move into that premises. And yeah, through that, managed to build out a network and meet the right people who enabled us to scale up and expand it nationally, which is, yeah, super exciting. And I guess since then, there's been some really cool developments in terms of there actually being a physical site in King's Cross, which is a major railway hub in London. We also, something I worked on before I moved to the US, is we also moved an actual TV studio into the UK's largest food market, which is called Market Halls, which is in West End. So it's just off Oxford Street. It's closed at the minute, unfortunately, but was this, I'm trying to think of what's the example in New York. It's very similar to Smorgasburg, or very similar to Time Out Market. It's a food market with loads of pop-up stores, pop-up restaurants within it. Some of the best pop-up restaurants from across the whole of London are based there. Amazing location. And Simon Anderson, who was the chief operating officer and chief creative officer at the time, whilst the construction was going on, we met, we had a chat about potential to work together. And we've actually plugged in a TV studio, which people can look through like a window pane to see us actually like cooking food, filming interviews with celebrities about their favorite food, all the content that gets produced. And has really put us on the map in the real world, because this is like the number one trendy spot to go in London to grab a bite to eat, in the heart of London. And we're there up in lights. We have this huge neon sign there. People can watch us creating the content. And yeah, that's, I guess, where we had got to with Twisted. But there were ideas mooted to do similar things to how Infatuation, who I'm sure you know, like a huge food publisher. We have grand plans to do things like a food festival, for example. We have grand plans to expand the restaurant business into new markets like New York. And yeah, I guess where we go with the other media brands, some of the ideas that we floated about, which I'm just trying to think, yes, there's been press releases that have gone out about them, so I can definitely share information. Craft Factory, our craft and parenting community, we have this idea to launch this D2C craft box, which will get sent to your home, that has all of the equipment you could need to recreate any of the crafts that we're doing on the channel, which is an awesome idea. It just makes complete sense. It's the logistics are a bit difficult and a bit tricky, but it should be really symbiotic. It should, the audience we reach should want to buy this box, because we know they're creating the tutorial, they're recreating the creations and doing the tutorials at home with their kids and their families. So they're obviously getting the supplies from somewhere. So why shouldn't they get it through the brand they already know and love? It makes sense. With 4-9, we've mooted ideas, which is the female focus one that has a couple of beauty sub communities, one called 4-9 Looks, which is the one that's huge on Snap. We've mooted the idea of potentially having like a nail salon or a beauty salon. I don't even know what the word is. That just shows the last time I went and got my hair cut or spoke to a woman about this sort of thing. But yeah, you get the idea. With Level Fitness, we have thought about potentially having fitness classes in a gym. Like, who's to say we couldn't have a gym? Like, the possibilities are endless for each media brand. It's just like, what's the right timing? What's the risk that we're going to take? I've read a really interesting article in Campaign recently where a chief marketing officer was talking about if he could change the M in CMO, what would he change it to and from? And he said he'd change it to an R, and he'd call himself the chief risk officer. I think a lot of the time a CEO is very similar, and ultimately it's about like what risk and what punt are you going to take to grow the business to that next level. And I think these are the decisions that Jamie and the rest of the senior leadership team and our investors are going to have to make. Is like, okay, we've got all these amazing ideas. The sky's the limit. Obviously not right now because of COVID, to contextualize things. But we're going to inevitably take one of these routes. And it is just exciting to see, I guess, what happens and what's the pump we take. But lots of cool irons in the fire, lots of ways we can bring those brands to life in the real world.
Yeah. I think that, just listening to you talk now, I think that there is such a desire for this type of real world content, because I think when someone's watching TV, you can call it passive content, right? You're sitting down and watching. But then when it comes to social, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, a lot of the places that you guys are in, you can call that active content, right? Because you're really engaging with that content. And then the next stage and the natural progression of that is just actual real world interaction with media that you are consuming. And this is all the time we have today, but I'm just so happy that you guys are even considering taking that step. And I know you guys did it with the restaurant, but just on a wider picture, considering doing it, because I think that there is there's a huge gap in the market in there. And I think there's a lot of people that are striving and desiring that type of interaction. So that's awesome. And again, thank you so much for joining me. This was awesome. And good luck in New York with the rest of the lockdown. And thanks again.
This is the Thought Leaders Podcast.
All right, everybody, that is another episode in the books. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us your comments and reviews. And new episodes will be coming out every Monday. So until then, have an awesome week.
This is the Thought Leaders Podcast.